like to thank each one who took part in our service this morning, making it possible. And again, thank you for being here to worship and to study with us, continuing here in the latter portion of John's Gospel, looking at people turning their backs upon the Lord, rejecting him. And today we see it is Peter who rejects the Lord in John chapter 18, verses 15 to 18 and verses 25 to 27. And what a life Peter lived, a life by and large for the Lord. But when we think of his name, how often is this the episode that comes to mind? How stark does a betrayal stand in contrast to everything else in his life? But that's what he's remembered for. For example, like Benedict Arnold, you don't think of his victory at Saratoga. You don't think of anything else but his betrayal. But we will see Peter. Yes, he'll refuse to even own his Lord's name. But we do have hope at the end of this, and especially as we go further in John's Gospel. And hopefully this is a challenge, but it can be an encouragement to us as well. So John chapter 18, starting in verse 15. If you're there, if you would, stand with me for the reading of God's Word, if you're able. And Simon Peter followed Jesus, and so did another disciple. That disciple was known unto the high priest and went in with Jesus into the palace of the high priest. But Peter stood at the door without. Then went out that other disciple, which was known to the high priest, and spake unto her that kept the door, and brought in Peter. Then saith the damsel that kept the door unto Peter, Art not thou also one of this man's disciples? And he said, I am not. And the servants and officers stood there who had made a fire of coals, for it was cold. And they warmed themselves, and Peter stood with them and warmed himself. Down to verse 25. And Simon Peter stood and warmed himself, and they said therefore unto him, Art not thou also one of his disciples? He denied it and said, I am not. One of the servants of the high priest, being a kinsman whose ear Peter had cut off, saith, Did not I see thee in the garden with him? Peter then denied again, and immediately the cock crew. Heavenly Father, please help us to learn from this. Please help us to see what Peter went through and learn from his experiences, Lord. Please guide me in the words and truth to say, and please apply it to our hearts by your Spirit. We love you. We ask it in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you. You may be seated. So far in chapter 18, we've seen, last week we saw an implacable enemy of Christ, the high priest, Annas, and the Jewish establishment. They rejected Christ. Before that, we saw the mob, and they were led by Judas, an apparent follower of Christ, but who turned out to never have been a true believer, a foe of the Lord. But here we have Peter, and there's no doubt that Peter, he's the one that made the great confession of faith. Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. He's a true believer, a leading spokesman, one of the Lord's closest friends, the intimate three disciples. But he denies even knowing his Lord. And Peter's denial provides a cautionary tale for us. It provides a stern warning for us as believers, but it also does provide us with hope for when we do stumble. So we're going to see Peter here alone at the palace. We see Peter among the perpetrators, and we see Peter abandoning his position. He's alone in the palace at verses 15 and 16. And Simon Peter followed Jesus, and so did another disciple. That disciple was known unto the high priest and went in with Jesus unto the palace of the high priest. So remembering our little bit of geography here, Jesus was out on the Mount of Olives, and he was led back through the city about a mile. And it's 1 to 2 a.m. The city's quiet, not much going on. And here this almost starts out, hopefully, that Jesus has been arrested, he's been bound, carried off by the Jews and the Romans, but not all of his disciples have abandoned him yet. There's at least two. There's Peter and another disciple. They are still following after him, whereas the other nine had fled to safety. They had abandoned the Lord. And then the 12th one, Judas, he is still alive at this point, but at this point the guilt is starting to work at him and eat at him, and before long he will renounce what he did. But Peter is following along, and we'll be looking at some of the other gospel accounts of Peter's denial. But first, let's look at John 13. Let's look at Peter's profession. How did Peter say he was going to respond to this? John 13, verses 37 to 38. Peter saith unto him, Lord, why cannot I follow thee now? I will lay down my life for thy sake. Jesus answered him, Wilt thou lay down thy life for my sake? Verily, verily, I say unto thee, the cock shall not crow till thou hast denied me thrice. Peter said, Lord, I don't care what's going to happen. If you go to death, I'm going to be right by your side. Nothing will separate me from you. Nothing will cause me to falter. And he was ready in the guard. Remember, he drew the sword. He was ready to fight to the death for the Lord. But Christ told him to put up his sword. And so, at this point, Peter hasn't totally abandoned his Lord. He sees Christ get carried off, and he's following after him. But if we turn to Matthew 26, 58, we see a little bit more specific of how he's going about this. Matthew 26, 58. But Peter followed him afar off unto the high priest's palace, and went in and sat with the servants to see the end. Peter's still following along, but rather than being at the Lord's side, he's afar off. The crowd's out ahead, and he's just keeping them in view so that he can see where they're going. But he's no longer right by his Lord. He's no longer being associated with his Lord. He's following, but it's far off. It's quietly. It's in fear. The problem is, Peter could handle a fight. Peter was ready with the sword. He was ready to go. That's what he was prepared for. Old, bold, brash Peter. He was ready to put up a fight. He could handle that. But when the Lord said, Peter, put up thy sword, I must drink the cup the Father has given me. The Lord's submission, the Lord going with these men, Peter didn't know how to handle that. Peter doesn't know how to respond in this situation. He doesn't know how to react. He doesn't understand submission. And so when he's not in the situation he expected, now he's thrown off and doesn't know what to do. And what a warning this is of following the Lord afar off. We want to say, oh yeah, no, I wouldn't abandon the Lord. I'm with him, I'm following, but we keep that distance that we can, well, if I got a side errand I want to run, I can do that. If I want to do things my own way, that gives me a little leeway. We need to follow the Lord closely, whether we understand or not. Peter let his lack of understanding hinder his relationship with the Lord. Sometimes we get in our head, Lord, this is the way things need to be. That's what Peter did. He was thinking, Lord, I'll follow you and we're going to fight this thing out. Sometimes we think, Lord, this is how you're going to work in my life. This is how you're going to use me. This is how I'm going to serve you. And then suddenly when those things don't pan out the way we expected, then we start to draw back. Then we get less fervent for the Lord. Then we get quiet. We get fearful. Don't let us not get stuck in our frame of mind. Let us let the Lord lead. As we sang, as George Beverly Shea wrote, I'd rather have Jesus and let him lead. Let him be the one that determines where we go and how we do things. But Peter, he's waiting afar off. But we've also got this other disciple. And we see him mentioned several times. But notice, he and Peter aren't running together. Peter's afar off. This one's, he's closer to Jesus. And then he's going to let Peter in. But they're not going to be in the courtyard together. So although the other disciples around, Peter is really alone during this time. And when it says another disciple, it's literally the other one. So there's one specifically in mind here, and he's unnamed, but we know consistently in John's gospel, when there's an unnamed another disciple, the beloved disciple, it is the author, John himself. And this man, he was known to the high priest. As we talked last week, Annas and Caiaphas are both known as the high priest. I'm inclined to believe it was Caiaphas, the active high priest. But he was known to Caiaphas, so presumably he was known to the household, the servants of the high priest as well. So that's how he's going to be able to gain entrance here. And we look at who is around here. We're going to see what was called the band earlier. The Roman soldiers, they seem to have left. They helped with the arrest. They see the Jews have it under control, so they go back to the Tower of Antonia. They're near the temple. And we've got the Jewish officers, the Levitical guards, and we've got the high priest and his servants and staff as well. This smaller crowd takes Jesus to questioning. And John comes in behind, and he's described as with Jesus. He's kind of maybe not right in the midst of the crowd, but he's much closer to that crowd and basically following in with them. And he comes in and he's given access to the courtyard and he's given access to the building itself. And the outlay most likely of a building like this is the palace proper was kind of built in a horseshoe, and there's a courtyard area in the middle of that, and then in the open end there's a wall or some barrier that has the gate and kind of a raised porch before you go down into the courtyard. So he was allowed through the gate, kind of into the courtyard, and then Christ was taken into the building itself, and John was able to follow there. But this trips a lot of people up that they think, well, John's just some simple Galilean fisherman. And we see in Acts, he and Peter are described as unlearned, ignorant men. So people think, what business did he have knowing the high priest? Well, when they're described as unlearned and ignorant, that just means they didn't go to Jewish seminary. That means that they were not trained in the law. That doesn't mean they were illiterate. Liberal, secular sources, they love to make the past look dumb because we're supposed to be evolving. So almost any era in the past, oh, they were illiterate. That was not true. John and his father Zebedee, they were businessmen. They were educated in what they did. And Zebedee, when we met him, when James and John were called, he had not just a fishing vessel. He had ships. He had servants. He was an influential businessman, and he was likely a rather wealthy man. So they were probably a leading family up there in Galilee. And we have every reason to believe that up to this point, before they met John the Baptist, they were observant Jews in the proper way. And what we learned about the high priest, the political nature of the office, it makes all the sense in the world that they would build relationships with the powerful businessmen, with the wealthy, with people of influence. So I find it very reasonable that Zebedee would have known the high priest, and that he would have known Zebedee's sons, and the household would have known them, and John would have been granted access. And the problem is, if it's not John, who else would it be? Because all the other apostles, they were Galileans as well, so they don't have any better reason to know the high priest, except Judas, of course. He was likely a Judean, but obviously it's not him. Some want to say that it was not an apostle, but a disciple like Nicodemus or somebody like that, but I think the evidence really points to John here, especially because we're going to continue to see him at the cross as well. But anyhow, so John is able to enter, and he goes into the palace of the high priest. But Peter stood at the door without. Then went out that other disciple, which was known unto the high priest, and spake unto her that kept the door, and brought in Peter. So Peter gets to the palace, and literally that means the courtyard area of it. And he's just basically waiting at the gate. He could probably see through the gate, and he could look and see the proceedings. But Peter's unknown. This isn't an open door policy. They're just welcoming anybody in. So he gets and once again, he's not following close enough to kind of get let in with the crowd that's carrying Jesus. He's far enough behind. He gets the door shut in his face, and he's alone. Once again, he's out on the street in the middle of the night alone. And John, he was with Christ. He got in. And at some point, John noticed that Peter was out there at the door. But John doesn't come right away because John wants to know, where are they taking the Lord? This is kind of a building complex, so he wants to know, where is the Lord being tried? Because John's going to go back there. We don't see John in the courtyard with the high priest's servants. We see John presumably at the edge of the trial. So he goes and follows to where the Lord is, and then he sees Peter out there. He goes back and he talks to the gatekeeper. He was known to her, so he vouches for Peter, and Peter is going to be admitted in. Let's look at Matthew 26 again, Matthew 26, 69, to kind of get a little bit more layout here. Now, Peter sat without in the palace. So that kind of, once again, it's easy for, in John, it kind of makes it seem like the whole thing's in the palace, but Peter, he's at the edge here. He's in the courtyard. John's in close to the action. Peter is without, and Mark actually describes it as beneath, because the courtyard is a much lower area. So Peter is separated here, and that's when we're going to get to the next point. And a damsel came unto him and said, "Thou wast with Jesus in Galilee." So the rooms where Jesus would have been interrogated, they would have had openings, and they would have looked out to the courtyard. So everybody out in the courtyard, they can kind of look and see roughly what's going on, but maybe not getting all the details like John has. And just the fact that there's a woman at the door, that emphasizes this is a private residence. This is not taking place at the temple. This is not taking place at some official gathering place of the Sanhedrin where business like that should be conducted. This is, if you will, more or less in the smoke-filled room. It's at the high priest's house, kind of under the radar, where they are trying Jesus. But secondly, this morning, we see Peter among the perpetrators in verses 17 and 18. "Then saith the damsel that kept the door unto Peter, Art not thou also one of this man's disciples? He saith, I am not." This woman, this maid of the high priest, she's the one keeping the door. She admits Peter. He goes, he kind of finds a spot by the fires, we'll see. He kind of starts to mingle with the crowd. But as the doorkeeper, she is responsible for who gets into the building. And she realized, well, John vouched for him, but I don't know anything about this man. And she becomes worried, is he a disciple of this Jesus? Should I really have let him in? So she goes and she leaves her post and she approaches him and she asks, are you one of his disciples? And in the Greek, the way the question is phrased, it's actually phrased with a negative answer expected. She says, you're not one of Jesus' disciples, are you? Because she doesn't want him to be. She's hoping she didn't admit a disciple of the Lord. But in this great city, what are the odds that this man is a follower of the Lord? So she's expecting a negative answer. But notice, it's not Jesus of Nazareth. It's this man. It's really a name of contempt. And no doubt she picked that up from the high priest and the others that were there, that he's just this man. This man, this thorn in our sides. But as I studied this closer, a word I brushed over, I don't know how many times, but then really started to jump out to me. Art not thou also one of this man's disciple? Well, also means they're another. And as I read and studied others, it seems to think, did she know that John was a disciple of the Lord? Seems that she did. That John she let in, that he was known to this household, seems that they realized that John was a disciple of Christ. And some I read they went, poor Peter, he denied his Lord, but none of the other disciples were subject to this trial. They would have done the same thing, but seems that John was willingly identified with Christ. He was at the same place as Peter, but he was spared the trial because he was already known to be a disciple of Christ. And we already looked back at what Peter said in John 13, the pride that Peter had. And that was going to get broken here. The thought of, well, I can do anything, Lord. He was going to need to learn his own failings. So John didn't have that same pride that needed broken, and John was already openly willing to identify with Christ even at this time. So he didn't go through the same thing as Peter. And when we get to the cross, John is the only apostle we see there. We see other disciples, but by and large it's the women that had come and ministered to Christ. But of the 12, John is the only one we see. And he was the one that was going to be entrusted with Christ's mother. Because Christ did have other brothers, but at this point they were unbelievers. And he was not going to put his mother's care in their hands. So he said, Mother, behold thy son. Son, behold thy mother. John did not deny his Lord. John did not fall away. John went to the same place Peter did, but he stood firm for the Lord. And once again, John wasn't there following afar off. John, he was right at the edge. And that's, I think, why we have this part of the chapter kind of broken up, that we're with Jesus and the high priest, and then we're with Peter, and then we're back with Annas, and then Peter, because John could see it all. John was there at the edge of the court, well, what was standing for a courtroom, and he was watching what was going on with the Lord, and then he could look right out and see Peter there in the courtyard. But the contrast of these two men reminded me of a parable of the Lord. If you'd look with me at Matthew 21. Matthew chapter 21, verses 28 through 31. Christ is speaking, "But what think ye? A certain man had two sons, and he came to the first and said, 'Son, go work today in my vineyard.' And he answered and said, 'I will not.' But afterward he repented and went. And he came to the second and said, 'Likewise.' And he answered and said, 'I go, sir,' and went not. Whither of them twain did the will of his father? They say unto him, 'The first.'" We'll stop there. Peter, he couldn't keep his mouth shut. He's the one that said, "Jesus, wherever you go, I'm going to go." He would have been the son that said, "Father, sure, if you want me to go, I'll work in your vineyard." But as we're going to get to in a minute, he didn't. He was the one that talked a big game, and then he didn't follow through on the action. Whereas John, in contrast, now, in contrast to the parable, John didn't say that he wouldn't follow Christ. He never said no to the Lord, but he didn't speak up like Peter and say, "Yes, I will." He just kind of let it be. But then when the moment came, he was the man of action. He was the one that was willing to follow. It's better to do than to talk. How often do we talk about what we're going to do and not do it? How often do we talk to the Lord about what we're going to do? Then we don't. How often on a Sunday morning the Spirit speaks and we say, "Yes, Lord, I'll do that for you. Yes, Lord, I'll give up that habit. I'll give up that sin. I'll get in this area of service. I'll give." And then the follow through doesn't happen. Or before others, we say, "Yes, I go to church. I do thus and so." But our follow through isn't what it ought to be. Now, make no mistake, the word is important. We should speak for Christ. We should speak the gospel. But that rings awfully hollow if our life doesn't back it up. It's important. Your life should draw others. By and large, people that you know, you shouldn't have to find excuses to tell them about Jesus, because there should be something different in your life that they want to know what it is. So we need to be a John, that our actions speak louder than our words. The maid asks, "You're not one of his disciples." He said, that is, Peter said, "I am not." Peter had just lifted a sword against dozens or hundreds of Roman soldiers and the Levitical temple guards, trained men of arms. He had done this for the Lord, and now a servant girl asks, "Aren't you a disciple? Aren't you a follower? Aren't you a student of Jesus?" Expecting and hoping that he's not. But now Peter is confused, he's frightened, and he's far off from his Lord. So he says, "No, I'm not." He claims that he is not. He refuses to make the stand and be identified with his Lord. 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 12 says, "Wherefore let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall." What a warning to Peter. He thought he stood. He thought, "Whatever happens, Lord, I'm going to go with you." But he fell because he was doing it in his own strength. We see in the synoptic gospels, Peter really doubles down. He's like, "I don't know what you're talking about. Who's this Jesus guy? I have no idea what you're saying." And in the gospel of Mark, you might be aware that he gives more details, that there's actually two cock crows, and it's on the second after the three. That at this point, he denies the first time and the cock crows the first time. But Peter's mind has changed. When there was a chance we could fight our way out of this, he was all about it. But now he sees Jesus bound. He's pretty sure Jesus is going to die. Peter himself is in danger. Remember, he raised a sword to these men. He cut off the high priest's servant ear. He didn't want anybody figuring out who he is and maybe imprisoning him as well. So it's just easiest to say no. He didn't want to make this a big thing. Just let it ride. This is just some servant girl. It's not like he's saying this to anybody important. It was easier to say he didn't know the Lord. It didn't seem to be any consequences. But how often does the first, what we see as a small compromise, a small sin, a small denial of the Lord lead to others? these things are slippery slopes. When we say, well, this isn't a big deal. It's if I lighten up here a little bit, if I compromise here a little bit, nobody knows. We think there's no consequences, but these things grow and we slip and slide deeper and deeper as we see Peter is going to. Peter at this time rejects Christ as his teacher and as his friend. And in this way, we could see him really paralleling Judas. Judas was one of the 12, and Judas denied the Lord and gave him over to the hand. Well, Peter, he's denying the Lord, and if he refuses to acknowledge that he is with Christ, he's more or less giving his assent to these proceedings that are going on. But we, even though that's the visual similarity, we can't forget the difference here, that Peter is a believer. Now, Peter has stumbled. He's letting himself fall into the mud mightily, but he can't live there. We know, and we'll talk at the end, Peter is going to be restored, whereas Judas, as an unbeliever, his rejection of the Lord was permanent, and he went into suicide and into everlasting condemnation. So we see Peter here, and we see the danger. If Peter could stumble, who am I to think that couldn't happen to me? If Peter could deny his Lord, who am I to think, well, I would never do such a thing? Peter, who walked with the Lord, who lived for him, Peter, who at the end of his life was going to die for his Lord, he stumbled. So all of us need to remember 1 Corinthians 10:12. If we think we stand, we need to beware lest we fall. Not fall as in losing our salvation, but in stumbling from usefulness and service to the Lord. So Peter denies his Lord. And then I found verse 18 very interesting. And the servants and officers stood there who had made a fire of coals, for it was cold, and they warmed themselves, and Peter stood with them and warmed himself. Yes, he gave this answer to the young maiden, but this was not an empty courtyard. Others were around. Others heard his denial. And these men that are there, these are the bondservants of the priest. Remember, that was the office that Malchus had. So these are, many of them were probably in the garden with the arrest of Christ. The temple guards are here as well. That's the officers. The men building the fire are the men that arrested Jesus. And it's Passover time. This is April. It's a cold April night. We can relate to that then, last night, right? So this is a cold April night on an exposed open courtyard in a hilltop really, in Jerusalem. So it's cold out. So they build a small charcoal fire, and that gives us the idea it's shedding more heat than it is light. It's not like everybody's face is brightly illuminated and you can tell who everybody is. It's just kind of a flicker here. But also a fire of coals. That the details we see here again speak to an eyewitness testimony. John was there. John saw these things. I think these things were emblazoned upon his brain, and then the Holy Spirit brought them out of his memory without error. So these men are there, huddled together in groups, trying to stay warm, chatting, talking. But just the way this is thrown in here, for it was cold. Yes, it was physically cold, and that explains the fire, but it reminded me to another thing that John has thrown in a couple times, like when Judas left the upper room and it was night. It was spiritually night. Judas was in spiritual darkness. Well, here it's spiritually cold. These men are in spiritual frigidness, the cold of death. They are putting God the Son on trial. They are assenting to his death. They helped arrest him. These are unbelievers at this point with no hope of eternity. And this is the crowd that Peter joins himself to. He followed afar off. He got separated from the Lord. Instead of standing alone, he decides to just kind of saunter up and join the crowd. He steps forward. He joins the group to get warm. And he was probably a little unnerved by the maid's question. So he just kind of wants to disappear into the crowd. Just lay low. He steps into this crowd of men, these same men that an hour before he had withstood with the sword. These same men that had taken his Lord away. And I find an interesting parallel here at the end of John 18:5. speaking of the crowd that came to arrest Jesus, and Judas also, which betrayed him, stood with them. Judas had made his position known. He was, at the great moment, he was standing with the foes of his Lord. Well, that's where Peter sets up shop now. John drew close to the Lord. John came up and was keeping his eyes upon the Lord, whereas Peter drew back. Peter sought comfort. Peter sought anonymity amongst the crowds, even among the Lord's enemies. And how often are we tempted to do that? You could say, well, Peter, he's not doing anything wrong here, but he's with the Lord's enemies. How often are we, there's no sin for me to be in that group or to do that thing, but who are we going to be associating with? Who are people going to see us with? Let's turn to Psalm 1:1. I'm sure many of you know it, but I would like our eyes to just go over it together. Psalm 1 and verse 1. Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor